This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Nā mai, haere mai, kia ora tēnā koe, Free FM 89.0, I'm Bruce Godmill Driscoll, Dwayne Porter, Trevor and guests this afternoon. Yes, even Gary Schofield will be in later this afternoon on the phone to talk about American politics and world politics. What's on my mind? The opinion is mine, column comment, history, happenings and hits of April 26th. New Zealand Hit Parade, April 26, 1974, after 1 p.m, Dwayne Porter, Gary Schofield, and Trevor's talk. Well, after attending yesterday's civic service at the memorial, I've come to the conclusion we have to keep talking about it. The rights and wrongs of World Wars 1 and 2, Vietnam, Korean, the conflicts in the Middle East. We will all remember the conflicts and the people who died and all those conflicts. We have to go back to the Boer War and all the wars between. But yesterday, the thoughts were of those men, many only teenagers, like my Uncle Jim, who was only 18 when he went to Gallipoli. And I know when I talked to him, he didn't want to talk about his war service, because I knew Uncle Jim in his latter years when we were in his house in Papatoetoe in Auckland. He didn't want to talk about his war service. He was very quiet. And my other uncles, like Uncle Wallace, Uncle Wallace, and a family relative, Lieutenant Colonel Tom, as he was known, Tom Wallace from Cambridge. Yeah, I had relatives fighting in World War 1, 2, and possibly before that too. And also my late grandfather, Alf, was a member of the Home Guard in Cambridge, plus various people I knew in my younger days. We have got to keep talking about wars, and the younger people should learn about them. We shouldn't also glorify war. Remember Gallipoli? It was an utter stuff-up by Winston Churchill, believing that Britain could win it. Well, the Turks won it at the end by December of 1915. Keep on telling your children about war and whether they want to join up and join the services, the Army, the Air Force, and the Navy, if that's in their future. We can't gloss over war, but we still have to learn people about it. I forgot to give you the weather forecast before we move any further. It's then partly cloudy, a chance of a shower this afternoon, light winds and afternoon southwesterlies. We're going for a high today of 18 degrees and overnight low of 6. Sunrise this morning at 6:53 and sets tonight at 5:39. Yeah, the day's getting darker. High tomorrow of 19 degrees. That's out of the weather right now. Let's get back. 1:16, 2:45 to go. April 26, 2026. 1915, Allied troops land at Cape Helles in the Dardanelles. On this day, 1894, Nazi deputy leader Rudolf Hess was born in Alexandria, Egypt. Age 93, committed suicide in 1987. It was this day in 1923, the Duke of York, later George VI, marries Elizabeth, Lady Elizabeth Bowes Lyon, later the Queen Mother.
Oh, the daintiest thing, it was sweet Alice Blue, where the little forget-me-nots take here and there, when I had an arm, I walked on the earth, and it was, and it was, and it was, till it went.
1923, Hermann Göring founds the Nazi secret police, the Gestapo.
Du mein Gedanke, du mein Sein und Wesen, du meines Herzens innerste Seligkeit.
And that was this day. In 1960, Roger Taylor of Duran Duran was born. He's 65. Guitarist Dwayne Eddy, born 1928. Rebel Rouser, Peter Gunn, Play Me Like You Played Your Guitar. Eddy died in 2023, I think, aged 86. Day in 1973, the actress Irene Ryan, who played Granny Clampett in the Beverly Hillbillies and episodes of Petticoat Junction, died. So let's go back with Flat and Scruggs.
To my story about a man named Jed. Poor mountaineer, barely kept his family fed. And then one day he was shooting at some food, and up through the ground come a bubbling crew. Oh, that is black gold, Texas tea. A millionaire. Kinfolk said, Jed, move away from there. He said, California is the place you ought to be. So he loaded up the truck and they moved to Beverly Hills, that is, swimming pools, movie stars. Say goodbye to Jed and all his kin. They would like to thank you folks for kindly dropping in. You're all invited back again to this locality to have a heaping helping of their hospitality. Beverly Hillbillies, that's what they call them now. Nice folks. Y'all come back, yeah?
Come ride the little train that is rolling down the tracks to the junction. Forget about your cares, it is time to relax at the junction. Lots of curves, you bet, and even more when you get the junction.
Petticoat Junction.
There's a little hotel called a Shady Rest at the junction.
Petticoat Junction.
It is run by Kate. Come and be her guest at the junction.
Petticoat Junction.
And that's Uncle Joe. He's a moving kind of slow at the junction. Petticoat Junction.
Yes, Irene Ryan did a crossover on Petticoat Junction when a baby was coming into the family at the Shady Rest Hotel in Hooterville. Yes, Irene Ryan died this day in 1973. She was, do you know, with Irene Ryan, she had to spend hours in the chair, the makeup chair, to get her look. She was a very young 50, in her 50s, when her and Buddy Ebsen starred in the series. There's not many years apart from them, so they had to work on her to make her look like Granny Clampett anyway. The News on the Hit Parade, chart.org.nz, history and song, April 26, 1974. The third Labor government under Norman Kirk in office. High inflation and, of course, dawn raids on Pacifica were getting underway, and amnesty came to many. And in 1974, Buddy Walters on the charts with The Nearest Thing to Heaven. It's 9-1.
Staying out late with the guys on a Saturday night, I guess it's so fine, but it don't compare with holding and touching you. Joe's on a Saturday might have been a ball, but it ain't nowhere without you to share the things that being together brings. And now I know it, I feel as though it was yesterday.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hold me tight, me in a movie show, oh so tight.
Still kisses when the lights are low. It may not be the new sensation,
from 1975, the late Duane Eddy. He died in 2024, not so long ago. And Play Me Like You Play Your Guitar with the Rebelettes. Bunny Walters before that, The Nearest Thing to Heaven. Well, yesterday, of course, we commemorated Anzac Day. From World War One. Here is John McCormick. On Free FM 89.0.
Dusk and the shadows falling o'er on land and sea. Somewhere a voice is calling, calling for me. Dusk and the shadows.
Talking about Irene Ryan as Granny Clampett in the Beverly Hillbillies, she did appear in another series after the Beverly Hillbillies, the Petticoat Junction. She also appeared in this series.
Just give me that countryside.
New York is where I'd rather stay. I get allergic smelling hay. I just adore a penthouse view. Darling, I love you, but give me Park Avenue.
The chores.
The stores.
Fresh air.
Times Square.
You are my wife.
I'll never forget the people I met braving those angry skies. I remember well as the shadows fell, the light of hope in their eyes. And though I'm far away, I still can hear them say, thumbs up. Or when the dawn comes up, there'll be bluebirds over the white cliffs of Dover tomorrow. Just you wait and see. There'll be love and laughter and peace ever after tomorrow when the world is free. The shepherd will tend his sheep. The valley will bloom again, and Jimmy will go to sleep in his own little room again. There'll be bluebirds over the white cliffs of Dover tomorrow. Just you wait and see.
Cliffs of Dover from 1939. It's 5 minutes past one. War movies. Yeah, there were some great war movies on various people like Douglas Bader and, of course, Douglas Bader. And there was also a movie released by 20th Century Fox that starred the one and only Kenneth Moore. It was released in 1960. And it started like this.
Hamburg, am 14. Februar 1939. Heute beehrte unser geliebter Führer mit seiner Anwesenheit die Taufe des mächtigsten...
Yeah, that's how the movie Sink the Bismarck started. And, of course, that was the launch of that particular German warship back in February of 1939. And it inspired a song released in 1960. There's many mistakes in the singing about it, but you know the song well. This is the late Johnny Horton, who actually died in 1960. Sink the Bismarck. The HMS Hood, the pride of the British fleet.
May of 1941, the war had just begun. The Germans had the biggest ship that had the biggest guns. The Bismarck was the fastest ship that ever sailed the sea. On her decks were guns as big as steers and shells as big as trees. Out of the cold and foggy night came the British ship, the Hood. And every British seaman, he knew and understood. They had to sink the Bismarck, the terror of the sea. Chop those guns as big as steers and those shells as big as trees. We find that German battleship that's making such a fuss. We gotta sink the Bismarck, cause the world depends on us.
He hit the decks a-running, boys, and spin those guns around.
But when we find the Bismarck, we gotta cut her down. The Hood found the Bismarck, and on that fatal day,
the Bismarck started firing 15 miles away. We gotta sink the Bismarck,
was the battle sound. But when the smoke had cleared away, the mighty Hood went down. For 6 long days and weary nights, they tried to find her trail. Churchill told the people, put every ship a sail, 'cause somewhere on that ocean, I know she's gotta be. We gotta sink the Bismarck to the bottom of the sea. They find that German battleship that's making such a fuss. We gotta sink the Bismarck, 'cause the world depends on us.
They hit the decks a-running, boys, and spin those guns around.
When we find the Bismarck, we gotta cut her down. The fog was gone the seventh day, and they saw the morning sun.
10 hours away from homeland, the Bismarck made its run. The admiral of the British fleet said, turn those bows around.
We found that German battleship, and we're gonna cut her down. The British guns were aimed, and the shells were coming fast.
The first shell hit the Bismarck, they knew she couldn't last. That mighty German battleship is just a memory.
Sink the Bismarck was the battle cry that shook the seven seas. We found that German battleship was making such a fuss. We had to sink the Bismarck, 'cause the world depends on us.
We hit the deck a-running, and we spun those guns around. Yeah, we found that mighty Bismarck, and we had to cut her down.
We found that German battleship was making such a fuss. We had to sink the Bismarck, 'cause the world depends on us.
We hit the deck a-running, and we spun those guns around.
We found that mighty Bismarck, and then we cut her down.
Yes, the pride of the British fleet, the HMS Hood, sunk by the Bismarck. Actually, the anniversary of the sinking of the Hood is coming up next month. As I said, it was down at Memorial Park yesterday morning for the service, and the music was lovely. Great talk, and young people there, and a mixture of people, old and young, and had a chat to some of the CitySafe crew and other people down there. And one of the songs I did sing was by the Hamilton Choir there. I'm talking about Hamilton, recorded at the Founders Theatre. This is the late, great Sir Harold Morrison.
Oh, Lord, my God, when I in awesome wonder consider all the works thy hands have made, I see the stars, I hear the rolling thunder, thy power throughout the universe displayed. For God am I, Tori Pecatio, Tia Tempo
just pause it there. We may go back to Harold Morrison, How Great Thou Art, after we've talked to a man I saw at Memorial Park yesterday presenting a wreath for the United Nations, Manawa Hanaran. Good afternoon, Mel Driscoll.
From the United Nations Association of New Zealand Waikato branch, a wreath. Its significance on an Anzac Day, harking back to dark days when nations endured pain, separation, suffering brought by war, today face the same. In conflict regions of the Middle East, in Sudan of Africa and over Ukraine, unprotected and unarmed civilians are victims of extreme violence that sophisticated modern weapons deal to them. People may say they join in the Anzac remembrance of soldiers, sailors and airmen who paid the ultimate sacrifice of their lives in the past, just as it seems their descendants do now and in the future. We welcome the chair of the United Nations Association of New Zealand Waikato Branch, Manu Manahora.
Afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
What did you think of the coverage of Anzac Day yesterday in the finest weather that anyone could have imagined?
Exactly. That was the best weather we had in the last few years. I had been placing the wreath on behalf of United Nations Association, Waikato Branch, for the last almost 22 years. And only twice during that period it was raining. But other than that, all the other days were fine for placing a wreath. And it had changed a lot from what we had about 20 years ago. We had the gun salute, and there was an occasion when the gun salute noise was heard by one of the school students, and the student fainted there, and St. John's ambulance has to give first aid to the student. Yes, they had never heard of these gunshots which is going on in various countries for the last few months. And last few years, we had three jets flying over at the end of the ceremony. But this year, we didn't have any of those. But I was really happy to see so many young students from various schools taking part. It gives them a memory of the past, because they are very young. They have not seen a war or anything like this. So it's good for them to remember the soldiers who gave their lives on behalf of the country.
Yeah. Hey, good afternoon, Mano. Bruce here. How are we?
Good.
Yeah, I actually was watching a young Asian scout. He was sitting down for a time. He was doing his best not to cry because it overwhelmed him. And it was, he got up and joined in, then sat down again. It's a bit overwhelming for some of the, I see it year after year, it's a bit overwhelming for some of these young people to stand at attention. Yeah, and luckily the St. John's was there, and we have to praise their service, our City Safe and other people who were there to look after the people.
Yeah.
And Kindred organised
it. It was a well-organised event, and especially this year, there are a large number of public on the other side of the celebration area.
There were Kindred organisations, Vietnam Veterans Association, Afghan Veteran Interpreters Association, and the Waikato Multicultural Council also laying wreaths.
Korean Association was also there.
And as to the crowds who came either to the dawn service in the city or the civic function?
Yeah.
You think it's looking as though it's in keeping with the tradition of the future?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Well, thanks, Manu Manohoran from Hamilton, for that insight into...
Thanks.
The commemoration of Anzac.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, Mano, again.
Never give up.
Okay, thank you very much.
Success is not final.
failure is not fatal. It is the courage to continue that counts. If you're going through hell, keep going. Continuous effort, not strength or intelligence, is the key to unlocking our potential. Courage is the first quality of human beings that guarantees all others. Attitude is a small thing that makes a big difference.
That is part of a quote by the one and only Sir Winston Churchill. Let's go back to Helen Morrison.
Ladies and gentlemen, the three most important things in life, faith, hope, and love. It is with my love that I thank you all for sharing this night with me.
Recorded in our own Founders Theatre, 1982, the late greats of Helen Morrison. How great they were. One of the songs sung by the choir down in the park yesterday, Mel.
And one who was there too was Paul Martin. Welcome, Paul.
Hi, Mel. How are you doing?
Good. And Bruce and I were wondering, how did it work out from your perspective, the attendance down at Piranha Park for the...
I have to say that I missed the dawn part, but when I did get along there, you know, there was just so many people coming and going, and it just looked like a really cool environment, and yeah, a lot of people.
Did you personally have connections with the remembrance, the Anzac commemoration?
Well, I've got family that served in, you know, going back to the First World War, the Second World War, Vietnam. So, yeah, it's always been pretty close to my heart, so just keeping their memories and their service, you know, relevant, basically, keeping it in people's minds so that we don't forget.
One shift in tradition, the laying of wreaths, differed from the past when there were fresh flowers often. None this time, it seems, coming from the organisations around the city. I think it's all plastic now.
There does seem to be a lot of plastic out there, which is a shame, but it's just a sign of the times, I guess. It's funny because, you know, one of my uncles was telling me when I was a lad, when he was a child, there was no plastic. It hadn't been invented yet, you know, and their toys were made of lead. But it's come a long way in, you know, just a couple of generations, isn't it?
It sure has.
Paul, have you sat down with your young folk and talked about this?
Yes, I have, and I've actually just been on a bit of a journey in the last month, and I've done a lot of research on my ancestry and stuff, a lot of it through FamilySearch.org, which is a free service, and it's just so helpful. So I've found out about my third great-grandfather coming to New Zealand in the 1820s, and you know, my great-granduncle who was killed in action and he was born in Coromandel and he was killed in action in France on the 23rd of October 1918, so 2 weeks out from armistice.
You have to say to your young folk that there were boys aged 14 at Gallipoli, New Zealand, one Australian. The Australian got killed, but the young New Zealander at 14, he lived to grow old, but...
Oh, yeah, I bet.
You've read those reports?
Yes, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, it was pretty common for people to, you know, men to lie about their ages so they could get in there and, you know, say they were older than they were. There's a lot of that going on. But, you know, I'm making sure my kids know all about it. That's why I'm researching it now and I can go to them with facts and figures and, you know, family photos and stuff.
Every year, without a miss, is a wreath that's laid by Glenda. And this time round, as on other years, she wrote remembering her relatives, her uncle, Rodney Arthur Starr, aged 22, killed at El Alamein in 1942. Her father, he survived in the 36th Battalion, and she also had a father-in-law, Robert Pico, of the 26th Maori Battalion. A big price these old soldiers paid, some surviving to live a natural lifespan, but so many never reaching home. That's sad. It's tragic. But is it going to keep on happening? What do you say, Paul?
I just want to say, no, it's going to stop here. It's really what I want to happen. The senseless wars, you know, it's just been proven over and over. It's just senseless. And, you know, we should have evolved to the stage now where we can get beyond violence and solving things like that. You know, you would have thought, but maybe there's hope yet. I like to try and keep a positive frame, but... Crikey, there's some pretty sad tales in a few short generations.
And the only physical evidence of that sometimes is the medals that are presented to soldiers and sailors and airmen. Have you any emblems, medallions, anything that directly links back to the war?
Yeah, I have a couple. So my father's father... Alfred Martin, he was in World War One. He was at Passchendaele and the Somme, so he survived both of those, and he got decorated quite well. But when he sailed back to New Zealand, he threw them all off the wharf and didn't want to talk about it anymore. I don't even know what service medals he was awarded now. Hopefully, I'll be able to find that out soon. But There's a couple kicking around my family. My great-granduncle, Frederick Barrett, who was killed in action in France there, he was part of the New Zealand Machine Gun Corps and World War One, so I've got his hat badge here. And I had another one with me just yesterday at the memorial, and somehow it just disappeared out of my hand, so I'm thinking... I don't know, maybe someone will find it or hand it in, or maybe it's meant to be with someone else. But yeah, you're right, these little mementos are so precious because they were actually physically there. It's tangible,
something tangible that links you through the ages to that ancestor, that great-grandfather or grandfather. Or
how would we know that missing medallion?
A big medallion?
How would we know that missing medallion?
The badge itself.
Yes. Yes.
It was with me one moment, and then I looked, and it wasn't. I had three little precious little badges with me that day, but it could have just dropped out in the park somewhere. And I can't beat myself up too much about it because it's so precious. You know, but I'll put up a couple of little lost and found pictures, so maybe someone will hand it into the police station.
Yeah, we've got to remember the New Zealanders who won VCs, like General Freyberg, who won it at Gallipoli, and of course he later came out of retirement to lead the New Zealand Expeditionary Force in World War II. He was injured so many times, and I was talking to a guy, he didn't want his men to salute him, which upset Bernard Montgomery a few times, because as you know, he was stuffy. We've got to remember General Freyberg, because he was a dentist in Morrinsville, just down the road from where we're living. So we've got to remember our VC winners.
And, of course, Charles Upham.
Yes.
Can't forget Charlie.
Yeah. Hey, Paul, thank you for your memories this afternoon.
Hey, you're very welcome. And, it's great to be able to share them with you. And thanks for doing what you do. Thanks for FM.
It's a pleasure. Cool. Thank you very much. Paul Martin. We've got to play this.
When Napoleon lay at Boulogne for a year with his flat bottom boats and his grand army, he was told by someone, there are bitter weeds in England. There are certainly a great many more of them since the British Expeditionary Force returned. Sir, I have myself full confidence that if all do their duty, if nothing is neglected, and if the best arrangements are made, as they are being made, we shall prove ourselves once more able to defend our island home, to ride out the storm of war, and to outlive the menace of tyranny, if necessary for years, if necessary alone. At any rate, that is what we are going to try to do. That is the resolve of His Majesty's government, every man of them. That is the will of Parliament and the nation. The British Empire and the French Republic, linked together in their cause and in their need, will defend to the death their native soil, aiding each other like good comrades to the utmost of their strength. We shall go on to the end. We shall fight in France. We shall fight on the seas and oceans. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall defend our island. Whatever the cost may be, we shall fight on the beaches, we shall fight on the landing grounds, we shall fight in the fields and in the streets, we shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
Up to mighty London came an Irishman one day.
Yeah, that's John McCormick leading into It's a Long Way to Tipperary. Mel, we're speaking to Gary Schofield.
We may not remember so well as you do our science textbooks, so please explain the revelation that we may, after all, have come from the cosmos and survived an apocalypse of another planet. Sure.
Yes. And it's even more remarkable than that when you consider what it, actually the implication of this new discovery from the Curiosity rover on Mars is that we may be the Martians, which is quite fascinating, but it is science. So the rover has come across 23 organic compounds, materials, and that date back to 3.2 billion years. And these are the building blocks for life. So Mars was habitable, and it was able, just as the Earth was, to establish life that time ago. Now, why life could not have survived on the Earth and this is in keeping with our recent Artemis mission to the moon, is that the Earth was struck, as you've alluded, by a cataclysmic collision with a Mars-sized planet. And that planet was called Theia, and it destroyed any chance of life on our Earth at that time because it became a molten surface, and what was flung out from that collision is the moon that you look at every night. So the current understanding is that asteroids, and this is also, there is evidence for this because there are fossilized microbes in asteroids that have survived in space and been seeded onto the Earth. So the plan is, and the theory is, that Mars had our life forms transferred to us through asteroids, seeded life, and that we're really Martian.
Incredible.
How's that?
I do remember that series, my favorite Martian from the 60s.
Yes, but more than the TV show is the recent discovery from the Curiosity of those organic compounds that create and can create life.
So we're not related to the great apes.
That would still make us related because we're talking about the essence of the beginning of life, so starting with microbes and then evolving into multicellular organisms and then creatures. Yes, that's still that chain of evolution, but if you go back far enough, you're not going back to the Earth, you're going back to Mars, according to this.
Martian apes.
Listen.
Yes, it sounds like something out of science fiction, and that is how Washington is every day, and every time I come on the show, something dramatic always is happening in the world, and I don't know if you've heard about the correspondence dinner. They said shooting, we don't know for sure, but I've attended that many times, especially with my dear friend Connie Lorne, and it's a place where all the major actors, very famous people, very powerful players, the White House, in this case, J.D. Vance, in which case, the First Lady, Trump, everyone was there, and they had to whisk him off the stage and whisk everybody away with guns drawn with this event that's just occurred.
Well, I was going to talk about the Pope today, but there's something else that's come up. Just take you back to, it's not going to work. Well, I was going to talk about that our friend Donald Trump has his sights set on the Falkland Islands because he's been meeting the Argentinian president. And, of course, Margaret Thatcher, her ratings were underwater back in 1982. But they went up again because of the British victory over the Argentinians in the Falklands. And now Donald Trump is trying to repeat history.
Yes, very good point. And it's part of a tapestry of a fabric that's been woven right at the moment. So Trump is faced with a terrible dilemma. And the dilemma is, how do I get what I want in this conflict with Iran? And he is looking at his allies who aren't rushing to help, and he's, in his inimitable fashion, threatening them. And one thing that is a threat would be if the United States wanted to side with Argentina about the claim to the Falklands. So that is trying to put pressure on NATO countries, especially, to become involved in this conflict. And I have to repeat that I made an error. My error was, I predicted the future, and I should never do that. I'm usually reporting on the present and the past. But I did think that there would be a negotiated settlement because it's in both countries' vital interests to do so. This hasn't happened, and now we're faced with another extension of that conflict. But I would like to underscore that if the plan is, as Trump is following now, to economically freeze, to besiege the economy, or perhaps even blow up some more aspects of life in Iran, Operation Timber Sycamore, which was launched by Obama to bring down the government of Assad in Syria, took 15 years.
Yeah.
So that approach can be a long time to be where we're living now with terrible prices for everything. So it really will be a balance between whether the world economy is going to shape or collapse or whether Iran's government is. And so I don't know, I wouldn't like to bet on either of those, but there's one glimmer of hope, and that is Trump is going to China. And China is a big player in this. China is affected by this greatly. Pakistan is an ally. They're also the mediator of China, it's an ally of China. And also there is the Belt and Road, don't forget, the Pakistan. So there's other ways of transporting oil and goods and trade through Pakistan to China. So China may help Trump save face and make a deal. That would be optimistic. But anything can happen.
Well, Jared Kushner is not going to Pakistan anymore, so that's been called off.
Diplomacy is off the table, it looks like, doesn't it?
Yeah, and of course, it's not the first time that an American president has planned an invasion. Ronald Reagan invaded another British protectorate back in the 80s, and again, Margaret Thatcher.
Grenada.
Yep, and again, Margaret Thatcher was not too happy.
Yes.
So,
but still, the big player is the United States. You know, I would say that it's going to be challenging to have all of your allies upset with you. But Donald Trump believes he can militarily go this alone.
Yeah,
it would be difficult if there were ground forces. So, hopefully, he will not opt for that option.
And of course, Trump has threatened to put tariffs on Britain, which would be deemed illegal. So because it's gone through the courts, it's illegal. So he can't do that. And poor old Keir Starmer, I think his time is up. He'll be out over the next few weeks.
Well, you never know. We'll watch this space.
Anyway.
But even some of these other issues that we think are off the table are not off the table, including Greenland.
And, of course, I've just found what I want to play you. Listen to this. This is Margaret Thatcher back in 1982 coming out of 10 Downing Street.
Defence Secretary, Mr. Knott.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Secretary of State for Defence has just come over to give me some very good news, and I think you'd like to have it at once.
The message we've got is that British troops landed on South Georgia this afternoon, shortly after 4 p.m. London time. They have now successfully taken control of Gritviken. At about 6 p.m. London time, the white flag was hoisted in Gritviken beside the Argentine flag, and shortly afterwards, the Argentine forces there surrendered to British forces. The Argentine forces offered only limited resistance to the British troops. Our forces were landed by helicopter and were supported by a number of warships, together with a Royal Fleet auxiliary. During the first phase of this operation, our own helicopters engaged the Argentine submarine Santa Fe off South Georgia.
There we are. That's from part of the speech that Margaret Thatcher and John Knott gave outside 10 Downing Street. And
very good choice of topic, because we've just gone through Anzac Day, we've just got the discussions of Gallipoli, and what better way of underscoring that than what you've actually just said, which is here we have the sacrifice of these young men fighting for the cause of any conflict, especially the Falklands conflict in this particular case, but also Gallipoli and the personal cost, the personal tragedy, and who bears that burden. The people of Iran bear it, yours and my family. We all at Gallipoli. My grandfather was shot at Gallipoli, survived, but it caused a terrible trauma throughout all of our country. So the burden is placed on the fighting men and women.
Yep.
Is a good point at this time of the year. And that's what we have to consider with all these conflicts.
Did your own father fight in any conflict?
Well, my father was too young, and he was in the air traffic corps. So he had, as he pointed out and told me this story, he had the pleasure of wearing a wonderful Air Force uniform. And if he took off those little training bits, he could pass for anything he wanted.
hey, Gary, we'll talk to you again next week, mate.
All right. All the best.
It's a pleasure. Good story. Anyway, let's get back to Count John McCormick.
Up to mighty London came an Irishman one day.
as the streets are paved with gold, sure everyone was gay. Singing songs of Piccadilly, Friend and Leicester Square, till Paddy got excited, then he shouted to them there. It's a long way to Tipperary, it's a long way to go. It's a long way to Tipperary, to the sweetest girl I know. Goodbye, Piccadilly, farewell, Leicester Square. It's a long, long way to Tipperary, but my heart's right there. It's a long way to Tipperary, it's a long way. Irish Malio, saying should you not receive it, right, and let me know if I make mistakes in spelling Malio.
Our own British life and the long continuity of our institutions and our empire. The whole fury and might of the enemy must very soon be turned on us. Hitler knows that he will have to break us in this island or lose the war. If we can stand up to him, all Europe may be free, and the life of the world may move forward into broad, sunlit uplands. But if we fail, then the whole world, including the United States, including all that we have known and cared for, will sink into the abyss of a new dark age, made more sinister and perhaps more protracted by the lights of perverted science. Let us, therefore, brace ourselves to our duties, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say, this was their finest hour.
Yeah, Churchill talking about the Battle of Britain, Mel. It's one of the great war speeches of the time. So, coming up, we've got to talk to Dwayne Porter back to 2025. Good afternoon, Dwayne.
Yeah, good afternoon, troops.
Tell us about the shipping situation, especially with respect to our anticipated problems over securing our petrol supply.
Well, at the moment, Mel, we had a petrol boat arrived in. Next week, we've got two more arriving in.
The names of these vessels, do they tell us anything about their port of origin?
One of them does, and he did escape from where he was, and he's on his way to Marsden Point.
Still no cause for alarm?
Nope.
Then you see the movement that reassures you, Dwayne, out at the port of Tauranga. Do you expect any change in the pattern of ships coming and going?
Well, not really, Mel. You know, we've still got more coming in. You know, it's filling up all the wharfs from the South Island to the North Island. So, there's plenty more fuel coming in and plenty more logs going out and plenty more containers going out.
Business as usual.
Yes.
And in your study, which you alluded to last week, it involves commitment and steady production of measuring up against deadlines and things like that.
Yep.
How's it all working out?
Very good. I'm on my third submission now. I resubmit for the second one. So the second one is the assessment for the second assessment. It's one of the hardest ones I've ever done.
These are through the Open Polytechnic that you do this study.
Yep.
Do you think it'll be worth all the effort?
Well, of course it is, Mel. You know, they've did the interview with me last week or week before, and they asked me the same questions as you're asking me. And I cheer on set them, yeah, it's a challenge. And it won't beat me. You know, I'm trying to beat the thing, but it's not going to beat me. Once I get the first one over, hopefully this, you know, the second semester will be harder and harder and harder, right up to thing. At the moment, all I got left is three lots of semester papers to do.
And your message to others thinking about studying?
Yep.
What would you say to them?
I would say do it. It's amazing how many people have come and saw me and asked me about it. What's the Open Polytech next stuff is to do? And I said to them, I said, one thing is, you've got to put your head down and then focus on what you got to do. Because I said, when it gets to a level two, I said, from level two, you go on to level four. But they've got to find you a level in between once you finish at level two.
It's going to get harder, mate. It's going to get harder.
Well, like, it's a challenge. And even I got asked questions from Open Polytech, boss person. And she said to me, you know, you've done very well. And I said, well, it hasn't been in me yet. You know, I said, the first time that I started doing the Polytech study thing, it was frustrating to start, you know, because you had so many assessments you got to do, you know, so many books that you had to hand in and that. And then I said, when I got to the assessment part, is that I didn't have to have, you know, I had no one else to help me, but I just went along and did it. So instead of me doing it, I was reading the questions of the assessment, but I wasn't reading the answers in the workbook. So, you know, I was doing it like back to front. And they said, no, you got to do it from, you got to read the whole thing from the book. All the answers are in there. And then you do it that way, you know, instead of thing. And even like with the first workbooks and everything, they even had the answers in the back, which you can check your own answers. But, you know, you know, even they asked me the other day, one of them asked me the other day, how do you know you got the answers right? Yep. So you just look back in the answer book and it tells you what the answer is. But they say there's not every single answer in that book as each category. Okay, I said that if it's, say, like question number two, I'll say A, B, C or D, and then when you finish that part, when it says question four, and then I see that it says question four. So you have to work out what question three was and also what question five was. So, it's a challenge. I got an email from them the other day to say that their team leader and their team support are going to get back to me. They want to do a big article advert thing, so I might have to fly down to Wellington to get that done. But hey, you know.
Yep.
I recommend that if anyone wants to do the Open Polytech, is go on the Open Polytech line and go through there. Yep. It's a free course, and hopefully I'll get some feedbacks.
Yep, we'll keep catching up with you because we've got one more song to play, and then Trevor is coming in to talk to us. Yes, it was a movie starring Gracie Field set in the Scotland dockyards. Wish me luck as you wave me goodbye as we kind of end our reflections on Gallipoli, World War One and Two, and all the wars after Mel.
Yes, so much to remember. Nikki of Melville fretted every day she was without her almost constant companion, Tiger, her ginger cat. His home in Ehrlich Avenue is close to a shopping centre with a dairy where he was last seen before the unthinkable happened. Tiger disappeared. Trevor.
That's very unusual for a cat. Normally very loyal pets, they disappear. But I think there may have been circumstances with your cat to find its way home after a lengthy period of time.
Let's hear from Nikki how it happened.
Hi, Nikki.
The disappearance.
Hi there. So Tiger was at the dairy at 6 o'clock in the morning where he usually welcomes the owner to the dairy. He sits out the front and waits for him to put the signs out, greeting people to the dairy. He was there till about 8:30 and then went behind the shops and he was gone. And we believe that someone took him. We looked everywhere, and he was gone for 1 week and 1 day. And this lovely gentleman saw him outside St. Pius Church, and he was hovering around the bus stop looking for food. And, of course, I was absolutely devastated and crying to find out that it was him and my son. And I went and picked him up and brought him home, and he's home with us, and he was very skinny, and we don't know how long he's walked for, but he's home with us, and he's living his life that he should be.
Oh, great stuff. That's a good luck story. And, Nikki, cats do wander. I know. But, hey, a great story to end the show today.
Trevor, you know the feeling. Trevor knows the feeling of missing a loved pet, don't you, Jeff?
Oh, yes. I've had cats I've been very fond of, but they all died of natural causes. I've never had a pet that's disappeared for a lengthy period of time, for a week or so. It seems that somebody, it's a cute-looking cat, probably took the cat from out of the shop, but the cat has escaped and found its way home. Animals have an amazing sense of direction, even across states in America, to find their way home.
Reminds me of that song, The Cat Came Back.
Yes, it's probably very appropriate.
Back, that's right.
Hey, Nikki, thank you, and look after you. What's your cat's name?
Tiger.
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 I could play I'm a Tiger by Lulu, but we're running out of time.
So. Has Tiger any other friends at your place to live with?
Lily. He's got a dog that I got a puppy when Tiger was probably 2 years old, and he used to beat my dog up, and now they're best of friends. Like, he's the boss of the house.
Hey, Nikki, thank you for being part of Cosmopolitan News this afternoon, as we've got to go because we've got two guys waiting to sing for their supper this afternoon. So,
how wonderful.
It's a pleasure. Thank you very much. Thank you, Trevor. Back in the 70s, the makers of Coronation Street, they put together a series called A Family at War. And this is the music, I think it's of Ralph Vaughan Williams. This is the theme to that television series. It was black and white, then colour, made by Granada Television. See you next week. Oh, just a note here, take your raincoats with you. It's about to pour with rain this afternoon, so if you have to go out tonight, this afternoon, get your raincoats out and umbrellas.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.